Welcome, Tom.
Thank you. Thank you, Father Trenton and the canons for having me here. As you mentioned, Tom Kelly, I work at SJS Investment Services. We're an independent RIA, a registered investment advisory firm that manages about $2 billion for individuals and institutions across the United States. I have SJS here, but I'm not, this is not a solicitation of investment advice or offering. Damien has me hooked up to a wire, so I don't want this to get sent to the SEC, and I don't look good in orange. So this is for informational purposes only, and I'm of course not an authoritative source here. By background, I'm passionately Catholic. I spent actually a year and a half in South Sudan as a lay missionary with the Salesians of St. John Bosco. And then since then, for the last 10 years or so, I've been in the investment world, and actually for about four of those worked solely with Catholic institutions across the United States at a firm called Christian Brothers Investment Services. So I have some experience and knowledge in this area. I have interest in this area, but I'm not, the authoritative source. And I don't think really, and you'll maybe learn, is that there really is no authoritative source per se on this topic. And I hope that's one of the big things that I convey, is that it opens your eyes up to what the church may guide you towards, what guide us towards as Catholics, but ultimately it becomes, as many things in the faith, a matter of prudential judgment and a well-informed conscience to help you decide what to do, perhaps with money that you have and where it could be invested for the greater glory of God. So, without further ado, should a Catholic invest? There's nothing in the Catechism that says absolutely yes or absolutely no. There are some bits and pieces around, gambling or use of your resources, but I'll at least first point to maybe a good source to look at, which is Jesus's words. And what he says, and one source is the parable of the talents from Matthew's Gospel, chapter 25, verses 14 through 30. I printed out, I posted it all here. We don't need to go through it. I think many of you are familiar with it, but it goes, through the servants that a man gives and entrusts his possessions to. One, 5 talents, another 2, and a third one, each according to their ability. The one who had 5 talents traded with it and made another 5. Likewise, the one who had 2 made another 2, but the one who received 1 dug a hole, buried it, and when he was sent to account for that, his master was not very happy. He replied to him, "You wicked, lazy servant. I knew that I harvest where I did not plant and gather where I did not scatter. Should you not have at least put my money in the bank? I could have at least gotten interest on it. And throw this useless servant into the dark where there'll be wailing and grinding of teeth." And in a similar way, this story is paralleled in Luke's gospel, the parable of the 10 gold coins, which is maybe not as well known, but is essentially the same parable. And one line that I kind of narrowed in on that is, he called 10 of his servants and gave them 10 gold coins and told them, "Engage in trade with these until I return." So I know not everything in the gospel should be taken literally, but I think these parables aren't useless either, right? I think there's a very clear directive from our Lord to say, with what you're given, it ought to be used for the greater glory of God, but also be used to be fruitful and bountiful and produce more. So I would argue, and many will argue, so a Catholic should invest. Now, what does that mean? Now, that's I think, perhaps the bigger question here. Certainly, I think there are arguments for and real opportunity for investing at the local level, right? Buying a real estate property and being a good landlord and having tenants or investing in a friend's business that's a restaurant or you know, some other small firm. You have that principle of subsidiarity there, kind of at the local level. You know where the money is going. It's going for a noble cause, and hopefully it can be done justly. But what about these publicly traded companies that we all know and love or maybe don't love? I'm sure you're familiar with some of these companies. Some of you may even work at these companies. Some of them are good companies, maybe great companies, maybe not so much. So what if the company conflicts with Catholic values? Can you invest in that? Now, you can probably, you're probably thinking right now, some of these you may not know where they may conflict with Catholic values, or they may not at all. But you probably see some of them, and you can really, something comes to mind of a news story or something that you've heard of that says, ooh, this is, this is really against Catholic social teaching. You know, for example, maybe Johnson & Johnson, or some of you are familiar with Johnson & Johnson, where they use embryonic stem cell research for some of their medicines. I hope we can all agree that is a big moral problem. But what about some of these other companies like Netflix, maybe, that has some troubling content on their website that probably goes against Catholic social teaching? Probably a lot of it's morally neutral. Some of it's bad. Some of it's actually probably good. So where are we to draw the line? How do we say yes, I can invest in this, and no, I can't invest in that? Well, sorry about that. One place to start is looking at the cooperation in evil amidst this, in the framework that's laid out. We know that the principal agent, or the one who actually does the act or engages in an immoral act or a sin, they're at fault, certainly. But what about a cooperator, the one who assists the evildoer in some way? Well, there's two aspects of that. A formal cooperator who intends the immoral act to occur, and they would be equally guilty of the immoral act. Then there's a material cooperator, one who does not intend the immoral act to occur. Well, they don't intend it to occur, but they still may be guilty of the immoral act. So let's dive down another level. Is it immediate material cooperation? Immediate meaning that you're providing the material that is necessary for the immoral act to occur. If the material is necessary, then you're guilty of the immoral act. But what if it's mediate? You're providing the material not necessary for the immoral act to occur, maybe capital, for example, money, for example. Well, then dig down another level, proximate. Does making a contribution to that act lead to the commission of the act? In that case, you may be guilty of the immoral act if there is no proportionately grave reason to do so. Or it could be remote. You make a contribution to the act that does not lead to the commission of the act, and therefore you would not be guilty when there is seriously proportionate reason to do so. So that's maybe got you even more confused. Okay, well, now where am I? Where do I fall if I give Apple $100? I invest $100 in Apple shares. I don't know. Well, thankfully, maybe thankfully, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops has their socially responsible investing guidelines. So oftentimes, as you know, in the church, we look to the authorities for guidance. Again, this is, I kind of mentioned this, that this is guidance. This isn't a heavy hand. This is what Catholics have to do. In fact, they're actually laying out what the Conference of Catholic Bishops does themselves. Oftentimes, dioceses, religious orders, other Catholic institutions will follow these guidelines. But as you'll see, maybe there could be reason to deviate, and I'll look at that in a second. But this gives, a great place for us Catholics to start, okay? Looking to our leadership that have thought this out well on the principles of stewardship. So they start with principle one. The Conference of Catholic Bishops should exercise responsible financial stewardship over its economic resources. Again, I think kind of going to that message that Jesus talks about in the gospel of making sure that we are being responsible stewards of our resources. But then the second principle, of course, is that the conference should exercise ethical and social stewardship in its investments, right? So that doing good and doing well, building up your wealth to do better, but also not sacrificing the ethics and the foundations of the church. So these two principles work together to encourage the conference to identify investment opportunities that meet both the financial needs and the social criteria. And they propose three strategies to seek this out. First, as I mentioned, avoid doing harm. So that would be refusal to invest in companies whose products and policies are counter to Catholic values. So as I mentioned, that Johnson & Johnson would be maybe one example of a firm that is engaged in embryonic stem cell research, the destruction of human life, in order to further their cause. I think that there's kind of no moral gray issue there. So that would be one example. Or if a company decides to is a good company to start, but maybe builds that on or acquires a company that does something immoral, it would be that second part, to divest from such companies. So you may invest in it and you realize, oh, they're doing something bad, I'm gonna divest from it, I'm gonna get rid of it in my portfolio. So that's the first one, avoid doing harm. The second would be to actively work for change. So to use the conference's role as a stockholder for social stewardship, shaping the policies of those companies. So as a shareholder, as a stock owner, as an investor, if you're owning the company directly, you are a, albeit very small, owner of that company. And by being an owner of that company, you have a voice at that company. You can engage the corporate leadership in enacting change. You can be a voter on the statements that they produce of should the company hire this board director or that board director or other policies that they may institute. And so what happens often is coalitions build. So you and you and you and you and all of you pool your shares with dozens or hundreds or thousands of others, and now you've got a large voice, and the CEO or the investor representative will be more willing to hear your concern. So that's another way to actively work for change, and I'll give a couple examples of that later on. And then the third is to promote the common good. So supporting policies and initiatives in the companies owned by the conference that promote the values of Catholic moral teaching, or positions advocated by conference statements while earning a reasonable rate of return. So that's kind of, promoting good within those companies. And then kind of going back to that first, my first example of investing in kind of more at the local level in a community development, which may not, but may result in a lower rate of return, but nevertheless is the church's preferential option, or expresses the church's preferential option for the poor, or to produce another significant social good. So these are kind of the principles. Now, how does this get carried out? Well, as I mentioned, that do no harm, avoid evil, This is what the conference, the guidelines that the conference suggests that they incorporate. Abortions, companies that are involved in abortions, euthanasia, assisted suicide, in vitro fertilization, embryonic stem cell and fetal tissue research, human cloning. Those ones are I would say, pretty cut and dry. And most of the time, there's a kind of a zero tolerance threshold for some of those. But then let's go down a little bit. Human rights violations. You know, what constitutes a human rights violation? Sometimes you may not even know that a company is doing a human rights violation. It could be somewhere in a third world country. They may try and keep it hush-hush. Maybe they're basically paying slave wages to people harvesting palm oil. So that one may be a little bit harder to figure out. Contraceptives, well, I know that that's a morally clear issue. What about Walgreens, for example, where an infinitesimal amount of their revenue comes from selling contraceptives? Should you or should you not invest in them? The USCCB gives a threshold on that one. And the reason that they would give a threshold on something like that, again, and that kind of goes back to that cooperation and evil, is if you divest, if you're not an investor, you do not have a voice at the table. I should say you do not have as strong of a voice at the table, right? If you're an owner, you have a much greater voice. And so there could be rationale to own part of it with then doing that right side of the thing, that encouraging positive corporate social governance. Pornography, again, kind of the same thing. What about Marriott hotels that may have pay-per-view stuff in their rooms? That's an action example of where corporate governance and corporate social action did encourage them to stop doing that. So that's a concrete example of a win. And this is where I kind of get into some of these issues of, again, I hesitate saying this, but where you may disagree with their guidelines. Tobacco, for example, right? It's not an inherently immoral thing, but the USCCB guidelines say that can be a destructive to the human person, and they don't want to invest in that. Same thing with gambling. Weapons, there's different thresholds in terms of what types of weapons. If it's defense only or defensive handguns, they allow it, but pretty much any other companies that are dealing with weapons, they do not invest in. Cannabis is becoming more and more of an issue as there are more and more publicly traded companies that are involved in that. So here's where you see, I guess, there is, again, kind of going back to my original point, this is a great framework and I think a great place to start, but there's that well-informed conscience that you all have, that I have, that has to determine, I think, for myself, ourselves, what we're each going to do. And then, as I mentioned, I think on the positive side of promoting the Catholic Church's social doctrines within the business world, as an investor, as a shareholder, you can be involved in proxy voting and corporate engagement, engaging in the management, going to the shareholder meetings, etc. And I'll give one example of this, again, from a church leader, and this made the news actually earlier this year. Bishop Papraki down in Springfield, who I know the canons know, this is in the Pillar Catholic, the online news source, and he's talking about this cooperation of evil, and so this is cherry-picked, polled, but he's asked, the question is, how does your moral analysis apply more widely to shareholders in companies like the ones you mentioned? In your distinction between material and formal cooperation, you stress the importance of intention, of having a choice, and the effect of that choice. But no one has to invest, for example, in Disney or have shares in Amazon. That's a choice, right? Are there moral implications to choices like that? So that's the question being posed. And he says, That's a very good question and a very timely one, because the USCCB just issued the new guidelines on social responsible investing, which I just covered very briefly. The revised guidelines discuss more fully than the previous versions the possibility of retaining shareholder interests, precisely because it gives you a voice in that company. So it could be that you don't want to be holding a stock, for example, if the only thing that a company does is abortions. You don't want to be in that business at all. On the other hand, if, let's say, a pharmaceutical company doing lots of good things, producing a lot of good drugs and saving people's lives, but a small percentage of what they do is to provide abortifacient drugs. Well, in a case like that, somebody might say, well, maybe it's better for me as an individual, or even in the case of a diocese or not-for-profit, to decide that we're going to retain our shares because that will give us a voice in the shareholders' meeting. And I have personal experience with that. So this is Bishop Prokhi saying, I have personal experience with that. Back when I was Auxiliary Bishop of Chicago, the governor of Illinois, then it was Rod Blagojevich, announced that there was going to be a policy or state mandate that pharmacists had to fill abortifacient contraceptive prescriptions. No questions asked, you just had to do it. I made a public statement criticizing that. I came from a family of pharmacists, so my ears a little bit more attuned to that issues, to issues that affect pharmacies. Anyway, that became an issue at Walgreens, and Walgreens was putting pressure on their pharmacists to fill these prescriptions to comply with the governor's mandate. And I happened to have stock in Walgreens because of my family's pharmacy background. We used to have our own pharmacy business, and when the family business closed, I actually bought stock in Walgreens because I wanted to own part of a pharmacy. So when this issue came up, I called Walgreens because I was concerned about what they were doing and the fact that I identified myself as a shareholder. That immediately put me on another track to gain a lot of attention. I wound up with representatives from Walgreens. They had their general counsel, their communications person, and their shareholder relations person come out to my office to meet with me. And I'm sure they would not have done that if I were not a shareholder. So they came, they listened to me, and they explained their position that they felt caught between the governor's mandate and they didn't want to lose their license to practice pharmacy. But they were sympathetic to the pharmacists, and eventually they worked something out. In fact, not just Walgreens employees, but other pharmacists took this to court, and the pharmacists won in Illinois. My point in telling a story is not that I didn't just say, well, Walgreens is doing something here that I don't agree with, I have to sell my stock. I kept my stock, and in fact, that gave me a greater voice. So I think that with any of these companies, if somebody is a shareholder, it could be at least an initial step to raise your voice as a shareholder and perhaps get their attention and voice your disapproval of what they're doing. I think that's a pretty powerful statement of, you know, was he directly, you know, was it a direct result of his engagement with the company? Maybe, maybe not, but I think, again, the wisdom of the crowds and the collective voice, I think can and has made a difference in corporate America, and I think that's a place that we are called to as Christians. And so I will leave you with this from on moral conscience from the Catechism of the Catholic Church. Deep within his conscience, a man discovers a law which he has not laid upon himself, but which he must obey. Its voice, ever calling him to love and to do what is good and to avoid what is evil, sounds in his heart at the right moment. For man has in his heart a law inscribed by God. His conscience is man's most secret core and his sanctuary. There he is alone with God, whose voice echoes in his depths. And so I think coming to things like this, relying on the canons and getting found sound spiritual direction and the forming of your conscience allows our consciences to be heard loud and clear. And for us, we have to answer that. And I hope that this at least piques your interest a slight bit in what that calling might be within the investing world, what you can do with your resources. And now I'm happy to open it up for questions, comments, dialogue, whatever it may be. Yeah, so there are Catholic, he said an ETF is called what's called an exchange traded fund, and so that's a pooling of many of these companies together. So there are Catholic screened mutual funds and ETFs, which are oftentimes following these USCCB guidelines. So there are options for it. Again, one thing to consider is if you're an owner of an ETF or an exchange traded fund or a mutual fund, you're not technically the owner of the companies themselves. You're an owner of the shares of those funds. So that ownership, while it could be in line, would not give you that same voice. Now, maybe the owners, the mutual fund company or the ETF company itself is advocating on your behalf, and there are firms that do that. And in fact, the firm that I was at, CBIS, has several mutual funds and they're doing some of this shareholder activism as well as the screening. So there are, but not as much as I would like, I guess. But there are options. Yes.
Thank you. So it seems to me, and I may be wrong on this, but like the moral justification for investing is kind of like not just that you're building your wealth, but you're also doing something productive, right? So I think it's especially a temptation for young people, but people who, you know, sit online and day trade all day, are they really doing something productive? That's kind of their main thing. It's so speculative, and it's not really, it's not producing, and it's not helping companies be productive. But it's this kind of thing. So I didn't know which way your talk was going to go. I thought I knew it was going to be this or something like that.
Sure.
Referring to. But do you think there's something morally wrong with that? I know a lot of kids might be very entrenched in it.
Yeah, there have been debates. There's actually a very good debate on a podcast on this between Trent Torn and then the other guy is Jacob Mott, from New Polity. It's actually on Matt Frad's podcast, and the debate, I'll say it's worth listening to. It goes a little bit off the rails because the specific argument is it moral to invest in a 401k? But they dive into some of that speculation stuff. The church also, I think you could clarify or it's worth digging into. I think that the church actually gives more direction on kind of the avoiding speculating and gambling, even more so direction that those are not good as opposed to investing generally. So I would personally kind of argue and move towards the side of yes, that's more of a gambling type thing, but they're also, you know, I'll try and say this succinctly, but you know, there is an element of, you know, the pearl of great prize in that the merchant that saw that, he saw kind of a mispricing in the markets and identified that. And he sold everything to buy that because he knew it was worth more than what it was being sold for. So I would also argue that there's nothing immoral. And Father Sirico, he was formerly at the Acton Institute. He actually just came out with a book called The Economics of the Parables, and he dives into some of that stuff. That's another thing worth reading, a resource. It's not directly tied to investing. But it is kind of the economics of the parables. And so he kind of says that, yes, it could be to build something bigger, but the identification of mispricing and capitalizing on that in and of itself is probably not sinful. And that, again, there's kind of some backing from the Gospels because of that. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And you have your like multi-manager pod shops that are doing long-short strategies, right? So buying with the intention of stocking up, selling stock with the intention of going down and getting the profit there. With regards to that, like proximity to, you know, harm, does that chart change a little bit in your playing the game with a long-short strategy as opposed to buying assets, selling assets, and like reaping the benefits strictly only from like being a shareholder?
Sure. Yeah, right. I mean, I think that's kind of directly tied to the kind of the day trading or the capitalization on mispricing versus the ownership of what the ownership of the stock, the company itself, and what it's doing. Right. You're less worried about anything that the company is doing and more saying that it's worth something different than what it's trading at. I haven't really thought about that enough deeply within the kind of the cooperation and evil slide to know if it would be moral, for example, to trade Johnson & Johnson in that day trading or that in that, you know, mispricing type of way. That'd be something that I would have to think on. But I think there's that's a valid, very valid, you know, question. I don't know. Dan?
So you mentioned that conscious was one of the great gifts of God. I'd also say that a couple other great gifts are free will and our bodies to do work. And, I think God encouraged us to use those gifts to glorify His kingdom, to magnify His kingdom. And in the parable of the talents, it talks about using those talents to do that. And sort of the consolation was, like, if you don't do that, the least you can do is put it in a bank or do something to gain interest. And so I'm wondering if it is more called towards using our resources to build, you know, a business or build something out. And then if we can't do that, we can invest. If there's like a hierarchy of utilizing those resources to the greatest good.
Yeah, I think there's an, again, this is kind of me speaking personally. I think there is an element to that, right? I think too that goes to the, as I mentioned, the principle of subsidiarity, right? The kind of who we are, you know, in this room, in this city, in our neighborhood, right? And building up that kingdom directly, right? I think you can probably have a bigger impact in opening a small business here that does more good. And has a more direct impact on bringing Catholic social doctrine and the gospel values to those people that you interact with than investing in Apple, right? I think that's probably a valid assumption. So, or in investing in a friend's business, right? So I do think that that's probably true, right? Now, there's practicality elements to that. Galore, right? That are hard to answer, and that's again, pulling full circle to that moral conscience of where do you feel called to do and use your talents. So yeah, I do think, and that's one of the, as I mentioned, that argument, that conversation. Those are some of the arguments that are made. You know, shouldn't invest in a 401k at all. You shouldn't invest in life insurance because you should be building up your community here, and they'll support you if something bad happens, right? That's maybe taken too far, but that could be the path that are the argument towards that.
Yeah, I know you mentioned it briefly on the list about weapons, and I guess I was just want to make sure, like Smith & Wesson, for example, like produces handguns that like you can buy yourself, and they make them especially for like police officers, like sometimes it can also be used in like committing a crime. Mm-hmm. I don't think that like you can, you know, you can't just determine like, oh, this person's gonna use it
right
for a criminal act. And like when they said there's like a difference between that and like other types of weapons, it would also be like Raytheon, for example,
yeah,
something that like Catholics should avoid, like actual weapons of like missiles, helicopters.
So again, in like this is all publicly available. The USCCB guidelines go into those a lot more. I just put one line weapons X'd out, but they dive into weapons of mass destruction, cluster bomb, those types of things where they're completely excluded. I think the only companies that the USCCB themselves would allow is handguns and defense weapons. So I don't know if Smith & Wesson, I don't know if they produce more than just that or not. So I don't know if they would invest in that or not, but they're pretty strict on that. Whereas I think to your point, right, it's really hard to, it could be hard to define, find the line of what is moral. They go to what is moral in terms of just war, is kind of how their framework of it. So there's a lot more behind just that weapons line. And really all of those screens, they give more details as to the rationale why or and kind of what it violates and what their thresholds are. So that's maybe another place to look.
Yeah, so this might be too specific a question, not sure if it's that well defined, but when it comes to the human rights violations part, especially in powered third world countries, some may argue that where they're working now may be better than what they were better off if they didn't have that certain job. I want to know if there's like a universal guideline rather than just us from the U.S. looking at it from a subjective view and saying, well, it's slave labor, so don't invest in that, compared to where they may be working now compared
yeah.
to maybe better, worse off.
I would argue that there's probably something worse than a universal guideline. There's the UN guidelines, which they oftentimes directly violate Catholic social teaching with some of what they're encouraging, especially in terms of abortions and whatnot. So say a little tongue in cheek, but it's a valid point. And again, that's where there is a moral gray area, right? What constitutes a human rights violation and what we may think is a very poor living condition, and it still may be a very poor living condition, is better than what they would have had. So I think just one example could be that you could be encouraged to own that, but also encourage that company to raise those standards beyond what is the floor, the bare minimum. That's just, one example, right? There's no director of human rights violations for the Catholic Church to say this company is bad, that one's good. No. Yes.
Could you speak a little bit to the relationship between investment and charitable giving, and particularly the idea that you have to balance responsibility to people who are in front of you now with the sort of utilitarian argument that an investment now can yield 10 times the aid.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And that's a very good point. I think it's a tricky one. And same thing with like a diocese or a religious order, right? Should they spend all their money right now on all of us, or should they be saving for, hopefully Father Trenton doesn't have to go to a nursing home, but long-term health or something like that, right? How do you balance those things prudently? Yes, you trust that future benefactors will be generous, but it is a hard thing a little bit. It goes, I think, again, this is kind of coming from me more as a person, not as a authoritative source or really all that knowledgeable. I tend to think tithing of the 10%, which has been used oftentimes as a decent barometer, as a good place to start. Tithing 10% of your earnings now into the church and organizations, charities that you care about. That's how I think about it. It's a good place to start. It could be more, it could be less, depending on your circumstance. And then I think, again, depending on your excess currently or perhaps perceived excess in the future, or situation, I think all those ought to go into play in that discernment of, you know, where should I invest, where should I give, you know, supporting a family, God willing, for many of us. All those things I think are, make it complicated, but I think starting somewhere can then allow you to pray on it and say, should I be doing more, should I be doing less, should I be switching things here, I think is a decent place to start. Yeah.
Okay, so asking for a friend, but so you know how State of Illinois supports abortion, right? And I have to pay them taxes mm-hmm. every year. Can I get a religious exemption from that, or no?
Unfortunately, no.
Okay.
Right. That's yeah. I mean, I think right. We could in a sense go on and on and on down that, but it's right. It's very true, right? There's been questions about that. Is it just to pay my taxes or not? You know, again, perhaps you could look at Jesus's sayings of give to Caesar what is Caesar's, right? I would imagine that the Roman army was, or the Roman Empire was doing things immoral at the time, and he still said to pay your taxes. But that doesn't mean that you are wiped away clean of not doing anything.
Good point. So right. I'm not here next week, guys. The IRS got me.
Yeah, right. But yeah, but right. As a citizen of Illinois, you have representatives and you have a voice. You have a vote.
Right.
Voting would be a good place to start. If anyone doesn't do that, please vote. Being involved in the legislative process through your representatives or you personally, right? Maybe running for office, like those are all, I would say, those are the alternatives of enacting social change rather than saying, I'm going to divest, I'm not going to do it.
Right.
So that would be my understanding of what the church teaches, recommends. I'm always very cautious of what the church teaches because I'm not an authoritative source, but what is known, yeah.
Here's another gray area. I'm curious if the Catholic Church has a stance on this when it comes to cannabis specifically, medical versus just, you know, doing it for fun. Like, mm-hmm. obviously, some people may say that medical has its benefits when it comes to easing pain, getting people through, let's say, certain cancer procedures and everything versus just, you know, consuming it for fun. Is there mm-hmm. a stance that, you know, the Catholic Church takes on?
I don't think there's a stance on it from an investment perspective. I do think there's a stance from a medical perspective in that, like, if you're using it for the purpose of the medical benefit as opposed to the purpose of the high, the, you know, the, in that case, it is, I think, it is allowable. Just as, for example, a contraceptive medicine, if it has a legitimate medical purpose as well that you're trying to treat. Now, my wife is a fertility care practitioner, so she would argue that oftentimes it's masking. But if there is a medicine that treats a medical issue and a side effect is a contraceptive, contraceptive property, I'm fairly certain that the church allows you to use that medicine again. If you're using it for the purpose of curing your illness, not for the purpose of being contraceptive. So I think I'm fairly certain it's how you're using it as opposed to the end result. Father Trenton?
Yeah.